Versus Universe. Good evening. Welcome to Paranexus Universe for Wednesday, June 1st, 2011. My name is Doug Kelly. So great to have you. And I'm here, of course, with Grant Rubendunst.
Hey, Doug. Welcome, everybody. We got a great show tonight. We're going to talk about Bigfoot. We haven't done that in a while.
Yeah, it's been a bit since we've had that on, that topic. So we're going to get to that in just a second here. We welcome everybody, of course, in the chat room as well as in the Inception Radio Network chat room. I will take your questions through the chat. If you'd like to call in with a question, Jamie Havikin will be screening your calls. The number is there on your screen. It is 347-945-7799. So hopefully we'll hear from you. As far as our guest tonight, we have Steve Coles with us. He runs SquatchDetective.com, of course, one of the better known names in Bigfoot research. So we're going to be talking about the trail cam photo taken last September and released in April. Steve, welcome to the program.
How are you, Doug? How are you, Grant?
Hey, good. Welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you much.
Good to have
you.
And
good
so
to be
I've,
on.
I've given the link to your page that has the report on it, so people can view that. It's on the Blog Talk Radio page. It's also on paranexus.org on the right side panel. If you need to click on it, just look for the radio program information with Steve Coles and you'll find it. If you're listening to the archive, you'll need to go to the archive page at paranexus.org and find this program, June 1st, 2011, and the link will be there. So that was an interesting photograph. I imagine you were pretty excited when you got it, at least something to work with.
Well, it's kind of funny how it occurred. I've known this researcher up in Vermont, kind of a quiet guy, never looking for any publicity or anything like that. Belonged to a Bigfoot organization up in the Northeast, and he came to me in February, the very beginning of February, and said, I have this photo I want you to look at. And what it was a series of five trail cam photos that he had that were taken at night. And the first four were coyote, and then there was the fifth one that was taken. And there was a lot of little things that I had to get to pinpoint things. Like the time was off on the camera. I knew that. The temperature didn't seem right on the camera. So there was a lot of testing that I had to do, you know, before taking this publicly. And, you know, we ascertained that the picture had been taken sometime after midnight on, I believe, on the night of September 1st, actually, not September 2nd. If I recall right, because I don't have the information in front of me. And the temperature of the camera was actually off by 8 degrees, and we did that using some live time testing when we took the comparison shots using the weather station identifiers that we used to correlate the original picture. I looked at the same weather station, and sure enough, the camera was off by about 7 or 8 degrees. So it was actually reading warmer than actually what it was.
Why do you think that? Why was it off? I mean, what would be responsible for that?
Well, you know, I'm not sure why the temperature would be off other than just a malfunction of the thermometer of the camera. You know, a lot of times I get a thermometer for the car or something like that, and you look at the thermometer, you know, say on your dashboard or whatever, it's never exactly what it is. It's possibly, you know, it's an older trail cam that he was using. It was a Moultrie. It was several years old. It was sitting in a box a lot of times. So who knows? It could have been dropped. It could have, you know. But whatever the case is, the temperature reading was off. And that's what I do know, factually. So that kind of threw things for a little bit of a loop. Because I was trying to correlate the temperature with, you know, a specific time period. Funny thing is when I got the temperature, the correct temperature, and I looked at the correct time, sure enough, at 12 a.m. to 1 a.m. time period read the correct temperature using the variant that we had discovered. So it all matched up pretty good.
Okay. So take us through your investigation of these photos.
Well,
photo one in particular.
The first thing I looked at was, you know, and Frank is not the kind of guy that's saying that was a Bigfoot. You know, he was saying, you know, I don't know what it is. People are telling me it's an owl, you know, some other things about, you know, well, it's a coyote, it's whatever. It's very clear in the comparison shots. It's much larger than a coyote, if it was a coyote. If it's something on the ground, like another suggestion was it was a man in a ghillie suit. And if you look at the picture compared to me, it's much larger. So you're talking about a 7-foot man in a ghillie suit that weighs, you know, about 350, 400, 500 pounds. You know,
yeah, that's a big fella. And Steve, did this gentleman who set up the camera, didn't he, he had incidents where he had apples stolen off his tree or
right.
other things, and and that's why it would trigger the whole event to begin with. Now, is that area, to your knowledge, because I'm not familiar with it, is that area have a history of Bigfoot sightings?
I'll tell you what. In the 20 square mile area, you know, we're talking, this is 25 miles from Whitehall, New York, which is like the Bigfoot capital of New York. So it's, and the actual area itself, Dr. Warren Cook, an anthropologist up at Castleton State University, he broke his bread there as a Bigfoot researcher, and because of that area, there's actually been sightings on Franks Road. So that made it even more interesting. There's been a couple of sightings within probably about 2 miles of his house. So it made a lot of sense. I mean, the one sighting was only perhaps a half mile up the road, the latest sighting. So it made a lot of sense, and that area is very rich, dating back to Robert's Rangers in 1759. Rogers wrote in his journal that his Rangers had to repel a bunch of bears throwing rocks at them. And we all know bears don't throw rocks.
Not any bears I've met.
The area is very rich. What had started to happen was is that the Frank is kind of a retired hunter. He don't like hunting much, but he noticed that on the roadside of his apple tree, it had been wiped out from about the 5-foot level to the 8-foot level. And he's like, what the heck is eating all my apples? Then things started, the apples started to disappear that were falling off the ground. So he decides, I'm going to put a trail camera on. And he puts this trail camera up. Nobody knew about it except him and his wife. And mind you, his area is very well posted. And with not, as I found out, I kind of looked at it the last time it was up. The actual photos are, of the posted signs, they're not very friendly posted signs. you know, for example, you know, trespassers will be shot, survivors will be shot again, you know, stuff like that. Frank himself found a burglar in his house coming home one afternoon and actually held the guy at gunpoint until the police arrived.
Cool.
So Frank, known to have guns, he is, you know. So he puts this trail cam up nobody knows about. You know, he pulls it down, he hands it to his wife, says, Frank is not the greatest with computers. And his wife goes, Frank, come here, look at this. And that's where he stood. So I get the picture. And mind you, I have to sit on it for 2.5 weeks because I went to Scotland for a National Geographic special. So I'm sitting there, you know, thinking about this trail cam picture the entire time while I was, you know, floating around Loch Ness.
Huh.
So then I come
That's
back
cool.
and I hit it running. And the first thing I look at this photo is the shadow does not appear. My most worry was that this was an owl. I can matrix it to be an owl very easily. Looks like an owl. But the shadow doesn't look right to me. The shadow looks like something's close to the ground. And you can show it by taking a light source, putting it behind your hand, and then putting your hand up against the wall. And you can see how the shadow casts. And the closer the object is to the wall, the closer the shadow is to your hand. So in looking at that, what appears to be the head of this thing, the shadows did not conform to me to be something that was near the camera. Plus, a lot of times when we have such close shots, we see a lot of what we call IR blowout, where it's just a big white blob. So not trusting myself completely. I sent the photos off to Dr. Bruce McAbee, who is a physical engineer who specialized in optics, worked 30 years for the U.S. Department of Missile Defense System, developing systems using optics technology. If there was a man to talk about that, plus he's very well known in the ufology field, he debunked 99% of the UFO photos.
Yep, he's a good guy.
So he took a look at it, and he said, definitely this is something that's on the ground. In fact, when I talked about it on my radio program, he went so far much as to say, this is either the real thing or this is a hoax, which really floored me. I wasn't expecting him to come out with something like that. And given the history that nobody knew the camera was there, Frank is not a young man by any means. I mean, Frank is, you know, in his late 60s, retired, definitely, and plus I've known this guy for 7 years. Now, he wasn't hoaxing it. Could it be a man in the ghillie suit? Well, again, I don't see a gun there. It wasn't hunting season. The guy's trespassing. There's a lot of negative check marks with this being guy in a ghillie suit. So that's what I'm left with.
Where in Vermont? What part of Vermont was this in?
This was in the Lake Bumestein area.
Okay, and that's what part of the state?
This would be in the central western part of the state.
Okay.
Pretty close to Rutland, fairly close to Chittenden. Technically, it's in Hubbardon, Vermont. So we're very, very interesting photo. So in doing all this, you know, I've actually gone out on the property, and the property is so remote. Yes, there's houses. His nearest house is probably from his house to that nearest house. It's probably, let's go from the photo to his house. It's probably maybe 75 yards or so. It doesn't seem like a long distance, but it is separated by a lot of you know, forestry there where somebody could walk around there and not be seen by the next-door neighbor. And Frank's house actually sits up in this valley between two huge mountains. His property goes back, his valley goes back for, I'd say, pretty close to 3/4 of a mile. And I mean, it's just lush, and I compare the terrain very similar to the Pacific Northwest. I mean, this is kind of the closest thing I've seen to Oregon, outside of Oregon in my life. So very, very good area. It does have bear, it does have wildcat, but what we're looking here on the photo is something larger than the bear, not colored like a black bear, because we have black bears in that part of the state, so its hair length doesn't look like a black bear. And that was the other thing, too, is a lot of folks said it's an owl, but if you look at it really closely, there's no feathers. All you see are hairs. You don't see any delineations that would look like a feather.
Yeah.
I thought it was really interesting how you kind of juxtaposition those poses of guys on their hands and knees like you would if you were, you know, like scavenging or scrounging around for some apples on the ground. I thought that was a neat comparison, you know, that was, because that's kind of the way it looked to me, that it was like down on the ground looking, grabbing apples.
Well, if you look at the photo and you think this is a Bigfoot, that farther extremity, the right arm looks like it's actually at that point grabbing an apple or grabbing right near an apple.
Something,
yeah. Or even tucking them in, you know.
But if you look at an owl, what exactly is that part of an owl? I mean, that's something that you can't explain. The other interesting thing is that if you look at the left arm or if you're looking at an owl, now see, owls' tail feathers don't have any rigid structure. Well, there's something grabbing on to that left arm. What it is, I'm not sure. I've blown it up. It looks like it could be a furry hand, could be a furry paw. I don't know. And then finally is that little black object in the bottom. Now, what could that be? Some have speculated that it's a boot. Well, it doesn't look like a boot to me because very clearly there's no stitching in it. There's no markings on it. There's no patterns on it. What I did recover the last time I was up there was a stick in the general area that could very well be it. I have to test that by taking a trail cam picture of that at night to see what color it comes out. Unfortunately, the stick has, you know, deteriorated quite a bit over the wintertime. It's a very light piece of wood. So I don't know if that could be it or not. So but I just found it kind of interesting. There's this probably 12-inch long stick sitting right in that general area that, you know, obviously last time I was up there, there was still some snow cover on the ground when I took some of the pictures. And when we were out there,
was there any reports of other sightings at the time that this gentleman was experiencing them?
Well, at a similar time, I would say no. But I know a couple of years ago, like I said, there was a sighting right up his road where a guy was driving down the road. It turned out it was Frank's neighbor, and he kind of found out about it. You know, Frank's a Bigfoot researcher, and the guy didn't want to tell him, but Frank got it out of him. You know, the guy said, well, you know, I own a business in town. I don't want this getting out, but this is what I saw. And as he's driving on the edge of one of the ponds that are along that road, he saw what he said was a big gorilla standing upright in the water, splashing itself with water as he's driving. And he was driving not believing what he was seeing in his eyes. Conversely, in a similar time frame, on Lake Bomasine, there was a couple rowing a boat that had seen a very large, upright, gorilla-looking subject walking along the shore, one of the shores of Lake Bomasine. So you're looking at that. That's very interesting. You go about 4 or 5 miles past this house, and now you're talking probably, you know, the 70s and 80s. There was a lot of sightings there, people seeing them crossing the road, walking along the road. And this is within 10 miles of there. I mean, the whole area has had sightings, very, very rich in sightings.
Kevin from the chat room would like to know if there were any footprints found in the area.
Well, here's the thing. Frank just pulled the camera off, really expecting to get a bear. And if it was a bear, he was going to shoot him or a big buck, and he was going to do the same. He said, well, you know, I don't hunt, but, you know, if he's out there, I'll take a pop at him and have meat for the freezer. You can do that in Vermont on your own property, even though it's not hunting season. So he never really looked for footprints, never saw any, never looked for any. So the answer to that was no. Like I said, my involvement came in, you know, about 5 months after that photo was taken. So I haven't seen any photos when I was walking around up there just a couple of weeks ago. But I do know that it is really good, you know, country for any type of animal. Plenty of apples, plenty of winter berries for the wintertime, plenty of pine, you know, plenty of wild animals such as deer. I'm sure there's plenty of raccoon in there. So it's a very fertile area for any animal that would like to reside in there.
So what do you make of these white splotches?
Well, I'm not quite sure. I mean, it could be just lighter patches of fur. You know, we always hear about stories about white Bigfoot. You know, perhaps it's just some graying of the fur. Perhaps it's a condition called vitiligo, which occurs in humans as well. That's where somebody has this white splotch of hair. Well, it actually comes down to the skin patches. It's very similar, I think, to albinism, except for it only occurs in, like, small patches. So it could be some of that as well.
Most primates, male primates, have different colorations as they grow older, correct?
Exactly. That's true. That's why silverbacks become silverbacks. Over time, that silver, you know, on their backs.
Because it's also a status symbol, too, correct? That other people know that they're obviously a male, but that, you know, that's one of their ways of showing their territorial.
I believe so. I mean, that's something that has nothing to do with whether or not something turns gray, but, you know, as a status symbol, and they just show like you see a guy walking down the street with gray hair, we know he's an older fella, probably a little wiser. Silverback.
Yep, popcorn heads. Down here in Florida, everybody's got one, including me.
Or the blue head. Don't forget the blue head.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
So these splotchy areas, especially the big one there, I mean, it almost looks overexposed a little bit from the amount of light that's being reflected back.
Yes, it does. It does. So there's a lot of questions that need to be answered about the picture yet to be determined. And, you know, since it is a drive for me, and it's actually about 2 hours from where I live, I am going back. We do have a plastic owl, which is going to kind of help us take some pictures in front of that camera with the trail. We're going to put up the same trail camera. We're going to take some pictures at the 1 foot level, 2 foot level, 3 foot level, 4 foot level, and see how the pictures turn out. And this will prove, at least in my mind, that, you know, Dr. McAbee was on the right track. And that's the biggest thing is, you know, I have to submit to what Dr. McAbee has said. This is something on the ground. I mean, this is, I mean, I was willing to accept whatever he said. No, this is, if you see, this is, that has nothing to do with it. This is an owl, blah, 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 blah. I would have accepted that. But instead, he said something completely different. So I was willing to go wherever the kind doctor had steered me to. But a picture doesn't prove anything. What's going to prove it is getting in there and doing the research. And I actually have a little project going on the end of the month that's going to be in there. And we're going to try some experimentation. And then, of course, the end of summer, we're going to put up a more higher grade, higher technology trail cam in there, see if we can't recapture what we had seen. So
now,
some
now,
of
Steve,
these things...
I'm sorry to interrupt, but since this has occurred and since the photograph, to your knowledge, has there been any more activity on his property?
He hasn't really noticed anything. So, you know, then again, it could be staying off his property, too, and only coming in at night. Frank's,
mm-hmm.
you know, now Frank's not wandering around his property at night. You know,
no,
he,
I just was curious to know if he had anything else missing, you know, or his
no,
pictures
no,
or whatever
no,
was being...
He did report that he did find a large pile of scat, which he could not identify, and he's seen bear scat, and he's seen deer scat, and, you know, coyote scat and all that, because he has all these animals running around his property all the time. And he did find a large pile of scat, probably about 30 or 40 yards from where the picture was taken. He found that several weeks later, I believe. And actually, he showed me the area where it was, and you could see where the grass had turned actually yellow where the scat had been and dissolved into the ground. But he said there was a lot of berries in the count, a lot of seeds in the count. So, but he goes, but just a fair amount of it was telling me that, at least he was saying that the fair amount was telling him that it was something that he had not encountered before.
Let me ask you a couple questions from the chat room. One, do you know the moon phase on the night that the picture was taken by chance?
If I do recall, and don't quote me on this, I believe the moon phase was a half moon that particular night.
Okay. And,
or a little bit after that.
And Jamie wants to know, does Dr. McAbee, has he had any new details since his initial report?
No, not really. There's, you know, really not much you can do. And he did. He took a look at it. This was a process that took him about a couple of weeks. And we had gone back and forth. I had shown him the original picture. He goes, is there some way of getting a comparison? So I did the comparison picture using the same camera, mind you. The first picture was done by Frank, the picture in the daylight. And that had been done back in September. The night shot I did... As soon as the snow cleared this past spring, I believe, I got to remember what it was. I believe it was April, towards the mid-April, I did that picture. And that was using his camera located in the same spot virtually, give or take a couple inches, I don't know. But virtually in the same spot on the same tree in the same direction. And I actually took a series of different shots because I wasn't really sure where this thing was standing in comparison to the camera. It was kind of hard. At nighttime, especially when you're working in the dark and working with a trail cam, that you don't want, you know, you got to wait a minute every time it pops off because that's what he had it set off, or he had set out. I didn't want to change any of the settings of the camera. So I took several pictures, and bingo, there was a shot that seemed to be, you know, the closest representation of what was on that film. Sent that to Dr. McAbee. I also did a blur test, which is also on the website, to show how blurry that camera can be. And all I did was, when the camera went off, all I did was go from basically a bending position, you know, with my hands on my knees, to standing upright, and that was the blur we got. So you could see that even that was not as blurry as that was much more blurrier than the picture that was taken that's in question.
Here's another question from the chat room. Was the area scanned with the ultraviolet light to see if there were any fluids left behind?
No. And Frank doesn't have that kind of technology. He's just a simple guy, loves getting the stories out there. The organization he was with was kind of old school. I'm kind of more the guy that carries a black light and stuff. But by the time I had gotten there, it's mid-April. It had already been 6 months, plus 7 months since the picture was taken. There was no sense in trying to do any type of high-tech stuff. I mean, Frank just basically got the pictures, looked around, couldn't find any prints. Of course, there was grass on the ground there, too, as well. So it was kind of really hard to discern. We're not talking that. Basically, that whole area is lawn.
Right.
So it's kind of hard to find a track in the middle of a lawn, especially if something's just passing through really quick. And, I don't know. I can only go on what Frank observed. And, like I said, Frank's a great guy, good researcher. He's great at getting stories, but he is an older fellow, so sometimes he's a little, archaic in his methods, but that's okay. I mean, now I'm on the scene, and if something happens, I'll be there, and, we'll break out the black light, and we'll break out, looking for tracks, and we'll break out some of the higher tech equipment.
You know, I'm looking at the picture, and I'd looked at this before, and I should mention back in, April, when you were just after you released it, and I had emailed you and asked you if you would share the original photos for analysis, and I just wanted to state that Steve was ultra willing to do that, and that was impressive, and I commend you for that. That's what a pro does.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what being professional and being scientific is all about, sharing that information and putting it up to the scrutiny of others.
Right, and you know what? It doesn't insult me that people think that this is something other than a Bigfoot. It doesn't insult me. I have to be objective, and everybody's opinion is welcome, whether they believe it's a Bigfoot or not. There are some things when somebody tries to say, well, that's a hoax, and I got, now that's kind of stretching it a bit, or somebody hoaxed Frank. That's stretching it a bit, it's like a common sense thing to me. Let's look at the common sense values. Nobody knew the trail cam was there. So how could somebody have hoaxed Frank? I know Frank long enough. If that's somebody in a costume, it's huge. Absolutely.
Well, your methodology is solid, Steve. I'm not trying to digress here, but this is one of the things that Doug and I emphasize all the time, and we really appreciate you, elaborating on it to the audience, because it is so important. I mean, if you don't take that approach and you try to embrace that kind of methodology, then anything you do is worthless. I mean, it's all your personal opinion.
And what I thought, when I saw this picture, it was great, because it was not... This wasn't like a big furry arm, right up close to the camera. This wasn't something that was blurry or blobbish. This was something that you could actually make out features on. So to me, that became quintessential, and saying, "Hey, we have something pretty interesting here. I think this is a big deal." And I thought it was a big deal because finally we have a trail cam photo out there that people can actually look at and weigh in on, rather than everybody scratching their head and saying, well, could be this, could be that. We're still saying that, but at least now we have some basis to form our own opinion. It's not like, well, this is an arm. No, it's the back end of a sheep. it's not that clear cut.
And I appreciate that. I haven't read anywhere where you said this is a Bigfoot. Everything I've heard from you is, we don't know what it is. We're trying to figure out what it is. Could it be a Bigfoot? Exactly. If so, it would have to fit this. Well, does it fit? It could. Is it an owl? Is it this? Is it that? Is it the other thing? Is it the back end of a sheep? So I mean, that's also the professional way to do it. You can't prove it, so you can't say it. And that's a good thing.
I mean, adhering to structure and process. I mean, that's what it's all about.
And regardless of
that, everything's invalid.
Like I said to the team I'm putting in there, the end of this month, is regardless of what this picture is, this area is rich in Bigfoot sites. So we're going to do what we always do. You know, we're going to try to see if we can't lure something into our evidence area, try to record something, whether it be audio, video, maybe in another trail cam photo. I don't know. I'm going to set some DNA traps up. I don't know. We'll see what happens. You know, and that's all we can do. I mean, all we can do is try, regardless of what that picture is.
Steve, tell me, I'm not familiar with the DNA traps. Tell me about that.
Well, this is a one. This is really a snarky way of putting up a very cheap, inexpensive DNA trap. A lot of people know that I'm very much into primate behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And as primates, we have two ecstasy taste centers. And when I tell you, you're going to go, well, that makes sense. And they're very simple. It's sweet and salty. So that's why we like potato chips. That's why we like candy bars. Because it's either sweet or salty that really releases the endorphins in a primate's head. And that's uniform with all primates.
Mm-hmm.
So what the whole idea is to basically take some lollipop bundles and tie them off in trees up at the 8-foot level, 7-foot level, 8-foot level, and try to lure them into that area, and maybe we'll go for a lollipop. Bite it off the stick. Now you have DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Because we survive the left on the stick. All you have to do is, you know, search the area for the sticks.
That's a great idea.
I mean, it's simple as that. It's kind of funny. I actually, being an investigator, I love crime programs, and I watch, and of course, somebody talking about, you know, this guy wouldn't submit to a DNA test, so they took this cigarette butts out of the trash.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I'm going, he's dead. You know, why can't we, you know, we don't need to dart something and have a blood sample fall out. We can just put some lollipops up because Sweetness is a primate ecstasy center, and Bigfoot's a primate. I mean, it's not a jellyfish, so it's got five fingers and five toes, which makes it a primate.
Well, you know, he likes sweet things because he's going after those apples, so, I mean, hey, there you go. He's going to like a lollipop.
Here's a very interesting correlation. Back in the mid to late 70s, there was a rash of sightings in the Abair Road section of Whitehall. Well, a lot of people don't know that on that side of the road back in the late 70s and mid-70s were apple orchards. There were tons of apple orchards. The New York Baby video, well, behind that video there was apple orchards. So there seems to be a big correlation with apples and these creatures, as well as some other fruits that I noticed, like blackberries and all kinds of berries. So if there's berries and apples around, this becomes prime Bigfoot target areas.
Let me ask you
something. They're foragers, so they're going to go for whatever is going to present itself, no doubt about it.
Let me ask you something. I got to ask some questions before they get out of my sight, when they scroll off the page. One of them is, why are the other pictures of the coyote, why were they so clear and the Bigfoot picture was not that clear?
Very simple. There is one picture of the coyote that's not very clear, and that was when it was 2-1 off, because you're looking at something in motion. That's simple as that. You know, the camera was set at 1-minute intervals, so we know that the animal was only in there for one frame, so it was there and gone in 1 minute. So as was I believe one of the coyote photos, and that was the blurry one where it was running through. So in the amount of blur is not as bad as the blur on the coyote, the last shot of the coyote, where it's kind of in the back near his driveway running along. So, and you can take a look at my picture. All I did was basically stand up, and you can see how blurry that is. So it doesn't take much movement on his particular camera. And actually, I think Dr. McAbee weighed in on that the camera shutter speed actually was, you know, more prone to get blurry. The blurriness was because of the motion. And Dr. Mack believed that it was an up and down motion. So it came in, squatted, and the camera fired off. And as it was doing some kind of movement, either up or down, when the camera triggered.
And I think you've alluded to this question already. Is that particular area or site still under surveillance? And if so, have you considered installing a motion detection video cam instead of a still cam?
Well, I'm kind of hunching on something. I don't want to put too much technology in there at once. If this is the real thing, I'm going to treat it like a crime scene and be as least invasive as possible. I am doing one mission, the end of June, that's it. Come the end of July, we will be reinstalling a higher tech trail cam and letting that run in the area. And what it will do is it will shoot a video burst of, I'm probably going to put it down to like five photos. So it will burst five photos, wait a minute, and then burst another five. So hopefully that'll get some clarity in what's going on. I don't want to over inundate the area with technology. There's a lot of suggestions that, well, these creatures could see in infrared. I'm not so sure I believe that. But the one thing they may do is they may actually hear some of the triggering mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
You ever put a VCR in or a DVD player and you hear like this high, especially with VCRs, you hear this high-pitched whistle sometimes. Well, that's an ultrasonic sound, and it's possible that these creatures can actually hear in that range.
Yeah.
So I have to be careful about trying to invade their territory and make it look abnormal by putting in, you know, surveillance cameras and whatnot. I'm going to keep it simple and see what happens. I mean, if it's not this year, there's always next year. So, you know.
Yeah, and that's probably your best approach because, you know, if you start putting a lot of stuff out there with a lot of strange scents, then that critter's going to pick up on it. I think,
exactly.
You know, that's probably the best way to go about it. And you make a good point. You know, a good researcher isn't going to expect overnight results. You can't.
Right. I'm not gonna go for broke and scare this thing off and make it very suspicious and lose the opportunity to repeat what was done last year. Just because I'm gonna be a little bit overzealous. I kinda wanna, you know, we're early in the season, we can play a little bit, but once that season hits where that apple tree starts to sprout apples, it's gonna be time to back off, put the trail camera on you and let the technology do its work and not pay much mind to it except, you know, once a week grabbing it, seeing what was taken on it.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff on that picture, and it's, you know, it's just so unfortunate that these pictures that we get are, you know, are usually kind of like that. Now that kind of opens up to a couple of other more recent captures that have happened. I know that you're familiar with the Bigfoot running across the street, because we talked about that was captured by the police officer dash cam. Yeah, that was actually presented on this new series, what is it, Bigfoot Lives or something like that?
Finding Bigfoot.
Finding Bigfoot. And it's on the Animal Channel, and it played the other night, I believe on Sunday. So yep. it was a good episode. I mean, I think the footage was really cool. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't like to stick my finger in the pie too much, but I have a problem with something that was said on that. I had actually looked at this dash cam photo around the first time it started circulating. Anyway, very quickly I found an article on it that the sheriff had located two gentlemen that were college students that had been basically bought a monkey suit and they were monkeying around, and he had found who was responsible for it. End of story, or so I thought. Well, on Animal Planet, on the program, they had specifically stated, well, I'm having problems saying specifically tonight, they specifically stated that there was no investigation done.
Yeah, I remember that.
All right. That was totally false. Totally false. And we find out that that moneymaker is telling us, well, he believes the sheriff lied. Well, belief is one thing, but you can't put that out there as fact by saying there was no investigation done when the sheriff is claiming there is. So if the sheriff is not willing to talk about it, the police agency is not willing to talk about it, at least put it out there for the audience to decide. I think that there's a little bit of intellectual dishonesty going on there, and that, to me, ruins the program.
Well, just out of curiosity, fellas, I have not seen that video, so Can you just briefly explain to me what the circumstances were, how it was caught on the dash cam?
Well, you know, a police vehicle has a dash cam going at all times. And he was along with him a woman who was riding along as part of a college course. And as they're driving along, what appears at the edge of this driveway, this thing comes darting out and across the road into the field. It doesn't jump over the guardrail, it goes around the guardrail and into the field. That's it. So the cop turns around, tries to ask, you know, you can hear him in the background, you know, Sheriff's Department, nothing happens. He doesn't see nothing. And they're talking back and forth. Wow, I can't believe, you know, they actually thought they had seen a Bigfoot. So the sheriff apparently, according to what he has told the news reporters, is that he went out the next day and started questioning the neighbors. And his very first stop, he had to question the neighbors. He found out there were two college kids that lived there that had purchased this suit. Now, you know, Matt claims that the story is untrue. Well, that could very well be. But the fact is that it was presented to us in a manner that said there was no investigation done when they're claiming there was one done. If you don't believe them, then have the gumption to say, well, the police claim to have done an investigation. How will we find this kind of, you know, but they didn't go there. They said completely that no investigation was done. Again, it's all about honesty to me in anything. And when you go on a show and when I do shows, it's got to be the truth or it's nothing.
Yeah, I agree. So,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, there was a question in the chat, too, about...
Can I just...
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I interject that, too? Now, that may not have been a Matt Moneymaker choice either. That could have been a decision made by the production company, which can happen sometimes. And that's why you have to sometimes be firm with production companies. But I'm sorry.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it could have been. That's one thing that the even researchers need to understand. You know, production company, they can do a lot of stuff. And you know, it may not be agreeable to the hosts or to the people in it, but it's the production.
Yeah, they can say they're going to show it or not edit it, but they edit it for dramatic effects for ratings and stuff.
And to push a thing. Anyway, question from the chat just a few minutes ago. Has anyone, any kind of a professional tracker ever tried to track a Bigfoot?
Well, that's a funny thing. I actually talked to a professional tracker a couple of years ago, maybe more than a couple of years ago, maybe 2007. I got a call. He's in the Adirondacks and, you know, gave me his credentials, told me everything about what he had, you know. And he says, well, I'll tell you this. I don't believe in Bigfoot, but I will tell you this. I am tracking something that's extremely large. It's not a bear, not a moose. And I've tracked it for 60 miles, and then I lost it. But whatever it was much taller than a moose, much taller. So take it for what it's worth. It was a story, but I did check the guy's credentials. He checked out. He was a professional tracker and guide up in the Adirondack Mountains. You know, I believe there was a Monster Quest episode where they actually had a professional tracker on one of the monsters.
Yeah, I think there was.
I believe that was the one with Jeff Meldrum and Jaime Avalos. So,
yeah, there's been some good programs. Well, tell me this, Steve. You know, has there been any footage that has been compelling or convincing?
Well, the only photo that I really found compelling is the New York Baby video. You know, that shocked the heck out of me when I saw it. I was expecting to see some sort of, you know, farce. And what I saw was something, you know, very interesting in the New York Baby video. For those who don't know what it is, it was very inadvertently taped. Here's these bunch of drunks sitting around a campfire. There's a festival going on the other side of the lake. Sitting around a campfire, camping. They're all talking, chewing up a storm. And in the background, you see this large object. Something appears to jump off the large object, scream up the tree and like, you know, not humanly possible, and start swinging around the tree. So, you know, anybody can say, well, what that looks like is, you know, a monkey. But let's look at the reality. Again, let's go to the common sense thing. In New York State, it's illegal to own a monkey. just won't happen unless you're the zoo. Number two is that the property, and I checked that with the property owner, who was Mike Lembo, and this was at the Lembo Lake. Now it's turned into an ATV park, so it's not, those physical features are all gone now. But at the time, I talked to Mike Lembo, and Mike Lembo said, yeah, we didn't allow any pets of any kind because we weren't insured for it. So we were turning away a person with a, we would turn away a person with a parrot away. You know, it just can't happen. We don't, if somebody gets bit by it, gets infection, we don't have insurance for that. We can get our butt sued. So there were no pets allowed. So somebody being on the property with a monkey would be off limits to boot. So, and the third common sense thing, it's dusk. It's dark out. Are you going to let your pet monkey play in a tree? You're going to be there for quite a while. Mm-hmm. So none of it makes sense that this was somebody and their pet monkey. So then what the hell is it? You know, it's clearly not a hoaxed film, because how can you explain that thing swinging around in the tree? It's doing something that a human cannot. The one argument I had, the fellow says, well, you know, what evidence do you have that Bigfoot swings in a tree when it's a baby? As primates, we all like to climb. That's why there's monkey bars. That's why we like climbing trees when we're a kid. Then we get big and we can't climb so good. We got more weight to carry. We, you know, the branches on trees and stuff don't support our weight. But baby gorillas, you know, climb trees.
Well, it's a good place, safe place.
Okay.
You know, if push comes to shove, I'm sure that's one of the first things they learn is how to climb a tree.
And again, I'll reiterate, right behind that area was an apple orchard.
Wow.
It even,
interesting.
That's probably the most compelling footage I've seen since the Patterson-Gimlin film.
What's your take on that one?
Well, it is what it is. It looks good to me.
You know, it sure stood up to the scrutiny, and especially now with the modern technology. I see those videos now, and when you look at the physiology of the creature and the way it moves, I mean, that's pretty impressive. I mean, I can't buy for 1 minute that's somebody in the Planet of the Apes suit.
I mean, who would have thought to put a pair of breasts on a suit?
Yeah, really.
That would have been the last thing I would have thought. Yeah.
That actually look like real breasts, that bounce like real breasts. And, you know?
Well,
but,
you know, the other thing too that's I know this isn't a new point, but just the way that creature walks, it walks totally different from the way a human walks, and I don't think a guy in a gorilla suit could do that, could copy that.
Has a nice gliding type of motion, which is very common characteristic of what people see. You know, it's just really quintessentially looks like a Bigfoot, although there are some things that aren't typically characteristic. A lot of people are seeing very long-haired Bigfoots now. Some of them are described as tall and lanky, long hair. You know, so some of the characteristics may not fit, but, you know, who knows? You know, maybe,
but you know, too, Steve, I mean, look, if we've got a species that's managed to live side by side of humanity for millions of years, I mean, and we all know that in the evolutionary tree, there were a lot of trial and errors. And
yeah,
there could have been more than one humanoid that made it to this point. I mean, we don't give them enough credit for being, I mean, I guess the best point, and it's been said many times, is 100 years ago, they didn't believe in mountain gorillas.
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody can say there is a vast amount of dimorphism in primates. So this, and dimorphism is, you know, difference in physical characteristics. And I mean, for anybody that wants to know, look at my Facebook page. Me next to a couple of researchers, I bumped into at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference. One guy's 6'8", the other guy's 6'10". They're brothers. I'm 5'10". I feel like I feel like a dwarf next to these guys. You know, and that just shows you the kind of dimorphism, even in human beings.
Yeah, and look at the diversity of like, hair color, eye color. I mean, you know, there may be more than one species out there, as strange as that might sound.
Most people have hair on their head. I don't, you know,
yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah,
so
me neither.
Here's a follow-up question on tracking Bigfoot. Can dogs be used to track a Bigfoot, trained, not be afraid?
I can't see why not.
Has it ever been done, to your knowledge?
Well, it's been done, and, the famous one down in South Arkansas, you know, but the dogs got skittish after a while. But you need to train them with a particular scent. And if you're training, and you have to find the right scent. So if you got something that you know is spot scent, chances are you're going to have DNA on it. And guess what? If you're not going to use it to train a dog, you're going to be sending it to a lab.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of difficult to get the actual scent unless you have something occur that you believe is squats. You know, it's really difficult to have a permanent scent.
So
Steve, why have the DNA on hair and scat and whatever fluids been so inconclusive? I mean, has there been anything, or is it that we're just not familiar, or that the tests are not necessarily inconclusive, but they can't pinpoint one particular species as opposed to another? Has there been anything tantalizing that, you know, that they can't explain?
Well, I know the reports earlier when the DNA technology started to come out, even before DNA technologies, they said that the hair lacked a medulla, which is the center core of the hair that we have, where you can extrapolate DNA and verify what these animals are. I don't know. Some of it, I believe, is collection technique.
Mm-hmm.
The reason, number one, you can't collect scat and expect to get DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you end up getting is DNA from all kinds of animals with a meat eater.
Right.
It basically looks like a jigsaw puzzle that's not made. It's just a box full. You can't really piece it together because there's all kinds of different animals in it, or different plant life in it, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as collection technique, very important that you know, you use gloves, and storage is really important. There's a big misnomer out there. Oh, put it in a plastic bag. Plastic bags are really bad because they break DNA down very quickly because plastic holds in humidity.
Right, you got to put it in paper.
Got to put it in paper. So, and you know, you can't touch it with a bare hand because all you need to do is one of your skin cells to rub off on that and the whole thing is shot. And then I think there's been a fair amount of what I call DNA craziness sometimes, that every hair sample is a squatch. You know, I saw a squatch over there. Oh, there's something on the fence post. Oh, there's hair. Well, what a surprise it comes out to be something other than a squatch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it happens. I mean, believe it or not, it was like 2001, and I actually plucked out a red fox hair out of a tree stump.
Wow.
I saw something had been noshing there on grubs. And I looked, and there's this hair. And I pulled it out, you know, very scientifically, bagged it up. And I took it to a friend of mine, and he said, "That's a red fox hair." And I had no doubt it was too short to be a squash hair. It was only about a half inch, but I found the hair, and that kind of made me happy that at least I was able to find a hair out in the middle of nowhere.
Let me
know.
Go ahead, Doug. We're getting short on time, So, Grant, if you have a quick question, go ahead.
Yeah, I just had a quick question to you, Steve. I'm sure you're well aware of those rumors. I heard, and I just wondered if you'd heard anything about this, and I'd heard that after Mount St. Helens, the disaster out there, that, you know, I don't know if this was just pure bunk, but that some of those foresting crews out there found some cremated Bigfoots. Any truth or any, have you heard anything about those stories?
Well, I've heard rumors of it, but they're just that, rumors.
Mm-hmm.
So, I saw
them loading bodies, but, you know, they took them away or burned them or something.
Well, I don't know. The way animals are and the way creatures are, I bet you when that thing blew up, there wasn't a squatch within 30 miles of the area.
Yeah, they probably got out a long time before that, unlike their human cousins.
Unlike Harry Truman.
Yeah,
guy, Harry,
decided to ride it out. And
I got to ride this thing out. And the squatch is like... You think so? We're out.
Yeah, they were smarter than Harry.
Yeah, I'm sure that if there's some rumblings that they're they're moving along. I'm actually looking at a roadside crossing. I was talking to a witness just yesterday about a roadside crossing in Mississippi. And, you know, he made the great point of bringing out that, you know, I don't know why they would be up this far north, he goes, but because he thought they were further to the south, he goes, you know, maybe all the flooding in the Mississippi River had something to do with it. And that has a lot of validity in of itself as well. So,
all
very
right.
Interesting.
So, let's give your website out.
Sure. It's squatchdetective.com. And I there you can get to all my links. You can get to my examiner columns, which I got to get writing a little bit more. My blog, yeah, SquatCTV, all the fun things. Squat Detective University, which is something I created to kind of educate, you know, the general public and researchers about Bigfoot research. A lot of good information there. So.
And when's your radio program on?
SquatDetectiveRadio.com. Squat Detective Radio runs Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard. BlogTalkRadio.com/SquatDetective.
Cool. All right, so interesting stuff. You obviously have been at this a while, and I really appreciate the way you're approaching the evidence. And, you know, objectively, that's a good thing. And, you know, it's the way it should be done. So I
apologize. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we certainly hope, Steve, that as the story unfolds, please feel free to contact us because we'd love to have you come back and give us updates, you know, because, you know, we're definitely interested in this and we'd love to have you come back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's been interesting. So hopefully you'll get some more stuff on that. And we appreciate everybody joining us tonight for this live broadcast, or if you're listening to the archives, thank you very much. Thank you to those in the chat room, those in the Inception Radio Network chat room. We invite you to visit us at paranexus.org. It's an association of anomalous researchers, which includes cryptozoology. So come and join us and be part of it. Share your expertise, your knowledge. Iron sharpens iron. Leave the ego at home. We all just want to find out the truth. So come visit us or visit paranexusacademy.org to learn more about paranormal research. Steve, thanks so much for your time tonight. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Steve.
Thank you, guys.
And that's all I got. I don't have a show to announce for next week, but we will post it on paranexus.org, so check there for the topic. We're also working on getting some webcasts coming up and bringing you some different speakers for that, some interesting speakers.
And for those of you that did participate, let us know. Give us some feedback about how you feel about that.
Yeah, last week we did a kind of a test run, so we learned a few things. Anyway, folks, that's all we got for tonight. Hope you have a great week. See you next time. Good night.
Yeah, good night, everybody.